You're listening to Strongpreneur Podcast, where we are waging war on mediocrity. Live your strong life and build your strong business with your host, Tom Reber. Mediocrity dies today.
Why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about who you are, maybe a little bit of your story and what you do and what you're about, man.
Thanks for the kind words, Tom. I appreciate it. It means a lot to me. We're almost around the same age. You know, I have a, you know, somewhat of a similar story as many others, but vastly different than others. And of course, it not only talks about age and wisdom, but it also talks about circumstance and experience that would make us unique individuals. Myself, and just to let you throw it right out there, I'm in a wheelchair. Obviously this chair does not define me. I always talk about the different philosophical differences of Dale Spencer. Oh yeah, the guy in the wheelchair, as opposed to Dale Spencer, the guy that happens to be in a wheelchair and that's how he gets around. And I've always lived my life to that mantra and not being labeled as a person. And I might not have a disability, but somebody that can really just help others and pay it forward because of my experience. So I had an injury about at age 20. I went to a school in Illinois. It's called Northern Illinois University. Silly young guy, 20 years old, junior, went our way to a party on foot, to go on some railroad tracks, take a shortcut, and split-second decision, decided to walk across that trestle, which would change the course of my life over the last 26 years. And, of course, you can date me there. You can figure out how old I am with that one. But, it was a long road from that point. I had a 4-story drop, ended up busting my back, spinal cord injury, had a very intensive and arduous rehabilitation experience, transforming to the person I am today. And we'll definitely get into that later this broadcast and some of the simple things that I had to deal with to learn how to live to a functional life and how I built that to the current successes that I have now, Tom.
Awesome, man. So let's tell us real quick, just so people can have a full context. What do you do now for a living?
So funny because, you know, when I was a high school student, seriously, Tom, the last vocation I would ever want on this planet is become a keynote speaker. Mm-hmm. And now that's all I'm doing. I mean, it's my passion. It's my business. And my why is to pay it forward and help people. I'm a real estate guy by trade, been in the mortgage industry for about 24 years, but had this epiphany back in 2011 saying that, you know what, I like mortgages. I like helping people. But am I really making a difference on the macro level? And so understanding that how these keynote speakers had built their successes from the ground on up, I was not only intrigued, but thought that I was drawn to this passion. But you know what? Passion is one thing. People use the word passion all the time. But if you don't have focus with the passion, you're not going to get anywhere. So my question was, why do I do it? I think it was Malcolm Gladwell had a whole TED talk about that. Is like, why do you want to build it? That's got to be your first question you have to ask. And it's funny, Tom, I always talk to my audiences out there. I'm like, if you have a mission statement in your mind, we're visual people. That needs to be in front of you the whole time. And my mission statement is literally plastered on my wall. It's basically to advance my keynote speaking business onto a global stage in order to help people overcome any fear resulting in success and happiness in every aspect of their lives. So funny, it took to my early 40s to figure out what my true passion was in life.
So, man, I'm going to dig into that, but I want to back up 26 years to the time right after that accident that you fell, and the days and months after that. Talk to us a little bit about what was going on inside of Dale back then.
Well, you and I talk about a lot of trash. You know, I had this injury at a time in my life where I thought I was catapulting myself forward. I had to do the conventional way of, you know, getting the undergraduate degree, getting the real world or whatever, and didn't realize some of the decisions that I made would actually change the course of where my life would be. Not only in a bad way, and of course in the beginning, it was bad. It was a crazy traumatic time. You know, I got, you know, my buddies were with me when this happened. They ended up you know, calling an ambulance, going to a local hospital, going to Northwestern University or Northwestern Memorial to have a 12-hour operation. Doctors telling my parents that, you know, your son's never going to walk again. In passing, by the way, you want to talk about a statement. I mean, you have three kids, Tom. That's the worst thing you would ever want to hear is get that call 3 o'clock in the morning saying that your son or daughter is injured and you got to get down to the hospital right away. Mm-hmm. And you know, I want to talk about baggage on that, Tom. I cherish my relationships to this day, but one of the biggest things I feel guilty about in my entire life is putting that those people through that. Mm-hmm. It's funny because that was a devastating time, but it really solidified how deep of a relationship I had, not only with my family, but my friends. And when I was in the hospital, I was going through rehab and everything, you know, I really concentrated and really wanted to focus on my support systems. Didn't know how that would materialize, but, you know, when it comes to the therapists and doctors and nurses, but it's families and friends that really build on that support system, really understanding who is there for you. And I had this baggage in my head because my best friend literally blew me off. Hmm. And you want to talk about a hit to the ego. And at that time, it was the worst thing that could have ever happened to me. Somebody that I thought was a brother to abandon me at that point. But after a while, I spun that around because I'm the internal optimist. I had that, not only the glass is half full, but it is full. I took that experience and saying, you know what, this guy to me was horrible. However, it was probably one of the best experiences I've ever had in my life because it truly understood who had my six, who had my back, who was there for me. And that spiritual, emotional, and mental support catapulted me literally to my current successes. We can always say, well, we're successful people. I did this, I did that. And yeah, I've done a lot. But you know what? I swear to God, Tom, it wasn't for those people, I seriously would not be here right now.
Yeah, what do they say? You know, if you want to know who your true friends are, you know, who's sticking around at the darkest moments of your life, right? You know,
and that's so true, man. That's so true.
So, dude, when you, you know, I've only known you for since probably 2010 or 2011, right? Somewhere in there.
It was a little after 2011 because that's when I had my epiphany in the keynote speaking.
All right, so you and I met at a Panera.
Correct.
Via a mutual friend. And so I've only known you as a confident guy. Okay. You know, I've never thought of you as anything but not a confident person. Tell us about some of the times through the years when maybe you weren't so confident. You know, what was going on in your head? Because earlier you said you were this eternal optimist. But
yes.
I also know that you've dealt with a lot of head trash. So what did that debate in your head look like?
First story that comes to mind, and it resonates so much, because when I was in rehab, you know, for those out there who know Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, the five stages of grief, denial, anger, depression, bargaining, acceptance. I was going through all of those emotions, but at the same time, I had this underlying goal that I needed to move on with my life. Even though this was the new world, I'm in a chair, I'm paralyzed, that doesn't mean my world ends. I needed to get out of rehab. I needed to be independent. I needed to get back to school. And it built up to that, the moment where I actually went back, not into disabled environment dormitory in the school, but actually my fraternity house, the same place I lived when my injury happened. I needed to get to that familiar surroundings because I needed to gravitate onto that support system, aka my friends. So I get back to school that August. I missed the semester of school, came back, signed up for all my classes. I am stoked. I'm in school. I'm with my buddies. They know I'm in a situation, but they know me as Dale Spencer, the person, not only the person in the wheelchair, which was awesome. However, literally, I'm seriously, Tom, you want to talk about not putting this into the equation? I started going to classes, and I got to tell you, in a campus that's about 25,000 students, I'm literally one of the only dudes out there that has a disability that people can see.
Mm-hmm.
And so what did I get? I got stares. people staring at me. I had no idea what they're talking about. And again, that's the head trash thing, that negative energy, knowing that, okay, are they awkward to go up to me? Do they want to help me with the door, worrying about how I was going to react to them? Are they even come up to say hi? Do they ask what happened? Do they overhelp? Do they not help at all? I'm having all these things go through my mind. And I got to tell you, like it was yesterday, I went back to that apartment in my fraternity house and I wept. I cried. I broke down. I my confidence was shaken. I'm thinking, I don't know how I'm going to do this. I got to go out to classes. And I had a full load all, you know, Monday through Friday. And all I am in it is in a college atmosphere where people, you know, their responsibilities out there, they're worrying about themselves and wondering what they're thinking about me. And so where I thought that I had the thick skin, it was a veil to probably the thinnest skin I've ever had in my life, because I've literally always been a confident guy. So what I've learned through that experience is utilizing a couple of things, the resilience, because what am I going to worry about more? Am I going to worry about what people think about me, or worrying about my laser focused goals and what I needed to do to get the class, to get the good grades, to take the exams, to get the undergraduate degree and move on with my life? And so that concept right there dwarfed everything else. Now, it didn't happen overnight, because there's a lot of conversations, not only with myself, but my buddies and my family, to really know why I am back there, what I need to accomplish in my life. And so it took a good, I would say when I got back to school, I would say probably a good 3 to 4 months after, and that pretty much came upon the 1 year mark after the injury. And so to work with my own demons, it took probably with rehab, outside of rehab, going back to school and worry about my own garbage probably a year down the line. Now, I'm a human and not a robot. So, depression, I get once in a while. But you know what? Those goals that I need to achieve in life far outweigh that depression.
Man, you know, as you were telling that story, I was picturing you on the campus there, you know, new to a wheelchair, right?
Yes.
New to, you know, how do you move your stuff around, you know, your books and, I mean, all the different challenges, obviously, that you face. But, you know, and then you shared about how you thought people were looking at you and things like that. If you can look back over the last 26 years and say, boy, a couple things that I really wish people knew about those of us who are disabled in certain ways, what comes to mind? What do you wish people knew?
Well, that's a good question. What people know is that this is a teachable moment, Tom, because what I did probably was an education that a lot of people in that school would have never had unless they had a close friend or family member that had the disability. They knew that I was comfortable not only with the wheelchair, not only with the disability, but with myself. So over time, new friends, because remember, I had a couple of sets of friends. I had the friends before the injury and the friends after the injury. So people had two different perspectives. The people that knew me after the injury didn't understand or didn't realize the guy that was walking and the sports fanatic and et cetera. They knew the new Dale, the new world, but I still had a lot of those same elements and attributes to me. But I think it was an educational experience of really how to help people in converse and interact with somebody with a disability.
Yeah, I mean, I know for me, I didn't spend a lot of time with people that had disabilities growing up, you know, and so when I would be around it, I would be uncomfortable, and because a lot of it was I didn't know how to act, I didn't know what to do, I didn't know how to help, and I remember meeting you, and we meet at Panera, and then a couple months later we end up down in Cabo for an event that we were both at, and I remember you telling us to hold you said hold my bag or something, and then you tilted your wheelchair back and you went flying down this hill. You remember that at the hotel?
I gotta tell you, Tom.
I thought you were gonna die.
that was probably the steepest hill I rolled down, but you know what? It was a blast. In fact, it was funny because you talk about not being around people that are disabled, but I mean, you got a chance to kind of know through some of the stuff that I've dealt with, because remember that layout? We had the compound. compound, and then we also had the hotel. I was at the compound, you're at the hotel, and the first day that we went over to the hotel for those leadership sessions, we wanted to take a quote-unquote shortcut, which ended up being this crazy hill that we had to go down. You picked me up from behind. I think Woodstock and a couple other guys were in the front, not knowing if you're going to dump me out of the chair. And I could tell by the look on your face, there was a couple of moments you're like, I don't know if this is going to work with this guy.
Yeah.
But you got comfortable with it really quickly.
Yeah, well, you certainly helped that because you were I mean, dude, you just acted like you got a pair on you that's, you know, as big as a Volkswagen, man. So
thanks, Blair. It's about getting from point A to point B. And now, you know, I come from a time, Tom, where, you know, when my injury happened, you got to understand, and the audience is, that was pre-ADA. American Disabilities Act didn't come out till 1990. So when I went through rehab, I not only worked about how do I take care of myself as a person, my body physiologically, but also the outside environment. Now, hospital environment's so controlled, but when you go outside and you have to worry about curbs and popping up, you know, on a wheelie in a wheelchair, because remember, I'm not going to be around people all the time.
Right.
And that was incredibly tough. Now, granted, 2015, you and I, we live in the Chicago metropolitan area, and so many places are accessible. Once in a while, I'll deal with an obstruction. But knowing that you're a speaker and I'm a speaker and then we travel all over the country, there's a lot of places that are still not up to speed on ADA. So, again, am I going to complain about that and tell people that I don't appreciate the place is going to be – is not wheelchair accessible? Or am I going to say, hey, you know what? How am I going to get from here to inside your place of establishment because it has three stairs? I was just in Park City about a month ago doing some downhill skiing. And for those out there that can want to picture the whole – scenario on how I ski. It's not where I go in a wheelchair and sink over onto the hill. Go Google mono ski. So it'll give me a chance to do it. But Park City is not the most accessible place on the planet. So I got a cell phone, man. If there's an establishment I want to eat some good food at and there's some stairs and I don't have anybody there, I'm going to give the person a call and say, hey, can you get a couple of guys to come out here and take me up on the wheelchair? I want to experience the good times without complaining about it, you know?
Yeah. You know, and you mentioned skiing. But dude, that's what I love about your attitude is you're a guy that just says, man, I'm going to live life. I'm going to go get what I want. I'm not going to let, you know, the potential excuses sideline me. I'm going to find a way to get crap done. And that's how I've seen you approach your life as a whole and also building your business. And so I want to commend you for that, man. I mean, I have so much respect for how you attack life. I remember the first time that you and I were like texting or Facebooking or something back and forth, and you're like, oh, I can't this week or whatever, trying to have coffee or something. And you're like, yeah, I'm out, I'm skiing and, you know, wherever. And I remember just thinking to myself, seriously, of course he is, you know? And so let's, you know, I appreciate you setting the table there because you've had, everybody has challenges in life. We all do, whether you're in a chair or out of a chair. And no matter who you are, or where you're going, there's going to come a point in time when you're going to have some serious mental strength. And I wanted to get your take because, you know, certainly I know you've thought about this, but how does Dale define mental strength?
You know, I'm starting to talk, you know, my speeches and my programs are really starting to morph into something that has helped me be introspective on exactly how do I have the tools to move on to a daily basis. So I talk, you know, just to get pragmatic here, I talk about, you know, five stages of fears, and I always use the acronym, and acronyms are probably the easiest way to really educate. And so what I do is I break that down into focus, energy, attitude, resilience, and support systems. So when I tackle any type of rudimentary goal or something as complex as developing a power presentation for a Fortune 500 company's leadership team, I am utilizing all five of those traits and building that into presentation. So that not only goes for business, but it also goes for life, because if you're not going to be true to yourself and really follow your passion and to build on your success and not use those elements, I think people are really missing out. And, you know, me being in the chair and being tested and, okay, great, you know what, I've really overcome this adversity and everything. Yeah, Tom, we all have our certain crosses to bear. It's how we get through that to become mentally strong. It doesn't happen overnight. And you and I have had this conversation with a couple of other people, too, when it comes to when you're building your daily plan and where do you want to be in 3 to 5 years? And you always have that 30,000-foot view, which is really important. However, how are you utilizing your time management skills to build those daily goals to get to that end goal? And that's how I do it. I use my focus, you know, because I got that whole ADHD or HD good thing going on. So I see squirrels everywhere. And so with focus and, of course, Tom, medication helps too. Let's just be honest here.
Oh, there you go.
So you work that focus and exactly what you want to accomplish. And, Tom, you're a big workout guy. I'm a workout guy too. And when it comes to my cardio and also my weight training, you need that energy. You bump up that dopamine and those serotonin levels. And doing an exhilarating workout brings you so much farther. It increases, I know, my energy output probably by 25-30% on any given day. Go ahead.
No, go on, man.
Attitude?
Yeah.
A positive attitude. When you're trying to sell your business or trying to, you know, cultivate certain relationships, man, you don't have that positive attitude. People feel that aura. They're going to feel that aura off you. You're not going to get anywhere. People are not going to work with you if you are a Debbie Downer or have a lot of that negative energy. And I always say that, you know what, if you're the most successful person in your group, take a guess what? You need to get another group. To really just strive for being, how can you utilize and help other people and have them help you and grab those ideas that they have had made to build their successful business to integrate that into your business model. We all do that. But you know what? That's all about collaboration. Now, resilience, I've talked about that a little bit already. Resilience in life, in your personal and professional life, we all have rejections. We all have bad days. We can't just, you know, pack up our stuff and say, you know what, there's always tomorrow. No, not seize the day, you seize the moment. That, you know, you got to get that emotion out of your mind because, you know, I've been on sales calls before, as with you, as with everybody else, where people just stone cold shut you down. I used to have that bad emotion for the rest of the day and it just destroyed the day. And now I look back on it, when I have those phone calls, I get bummed out for literally about 5 seconds and all of a sudden I stop and say, hey, you know what? This person doesn't need my help. I can call somebody else. I know other people that would utilize what I have to offer. So that resilience on a daily basis to build that business plan, so important. And of course, I talked through my injury about support systems because you know what? How I built my keynote speaking business, and Tom, you are one of those people that I've had many conversations with. I've had copious amounts of coffee and tea with people that are built their keynote speaking businesses and other businesses from the ground on up. I've utilized my mortgage database from my business, for my LinkedIn contacts from different walks of life, and really dug in and had those conversations to see where that can not only lead me, but to other people, because every conversation out there, Tom, is about opportunity. Maybe not for you, but maybe for the other person.
Yeah. You know, you talked a little bit about, you know, working the daily plan and being focused on that and seizing the moment. And it actually, it's a perfect way to segue into a question I had for you here. When you were, you hop online, you hop on Facebook, you see articles and things being shared all the time about how winners always create winning habits, you know, and if you're not creating the right habits, you're never going to get where you want to go. You know what I'm saying? All that stuff.
Yes.
So you were thrown into a situation several years ago where you had to truly relearn everything. And a lot of forming new habits, you know, if I want to work out every day at 5 a.m. or whatever, there's always going to be some resistance when you're trying to form these new habits. So I'm just curious what your perspective is as somebody who was forced into a situation where you literally had to, you couldn't just say, no, I'm not going to learn this today. You know what I mean? You had to find a way through it. So what advice, I guess, what I'm asking is, what advice do you have for people that are trying to build new habits from the perspective that you have?
Wow. You know, when I was working mortgage business and all I would do is prospect and work on deals, and that was pretty much it. And we just keep up on our database. I never knew the whole world of building strong routines that transform and transcend into good habits until literally after I had that epiphany of working my keynote speaking business. So, you know, in having these meetings and talking to people, a lot of things resonated, and there was a pattern growing of people that built those specific patterns into their daily life. And I got to tell you, I never had that as part of the business plan. I had the whole, well, let's see what sticks, you know, throw something against the wall, see if it sticks. That's the mentality I had. I had, well, it came from a spot where, not unlike a lot of people out there, that they didn't want it done today. They wanted it done yesterday. And that's how my attitude had become quite some time up until that point. So when I had this epiphany, when I felt that this was going to be a strong passion and strong, my focus needed to be building the speaker business, because you don't just quit one job and start the other job. There's a certain amount of time. In fact, they say most types of sales related businesses take 3 to 5 years to cultivate the relationship, the relationships, et cetera. I knew that there was going to be an amount of time between the transition. So what I did was, you know, you start reading a lot of self-help books and the video online marketing. Some guys that I listen to quite a bit are, you know, John Maxwell, Brendan Burchard, Robin Sharma. And a lot of those guys talk about the daily habits and the routines. And so what I started doing shortly thereafter, started developing my different habits. What can I do during the course of the day? What do I need to do with writing? Because one of my goals, of course, 2015 is to write a book. You get overwhelmed when you think about a whole project like a book. And so what I have learned is I need to do that on bite-sized pieces, doing a certain amount of writing per day, doing a quote a day, writing a blog a couple of times a week that I've been doing. Actually, that was one of my 2015 goals. Building my Twitter and my Facebook social media presence, building my prospecting. I had to be meticulous when it came to those everyday habits. And I got to tell you, Tom, you get to a point, and they say scientifically it takes, I think, 66 days to build a routine into a habit. Right. But it's funny because you get to a point where, you know, when you're doing a couple of things in your business, because, of course, you're a father, you're a husband, you know, life gets in the way. But isn't it funny, about 11 or 12 o'clock noon, and you haven't done these certain things that you usually do in the morning, and then you get that crazy itch and like, oh my God, okay, I need to get this done. And if I'm going to totally fail if I don't get this thing done, that has developed in such a habit where, and let me go back up to this, and I think it really helped out when I was in rehab. I had occupational therapists that helped me do specific goals in the course of any given day. Those developed into routines or habits. Now, the routine could be getting out of bed, into the wheelchair, over to the shower chair to get there, to bathe my body, to go to the bathroom, to wash my face, to brush my teeth. Those rudimentary goals, I look back on as developing those into a routine that made my life a lot easier. And so when you work on these habits, when you do it on a daily basis, those are mini wins. No matter how big or small, those are a win. You just think you have that sense of accomplishment. You put your padding your back, and you move on to the next goal. I learned back just to take care of myself and putting clothes on for the first time, which took me 45 minutes to do. But doing it on a consistent basis over and over, you modify, you adapt, and you build that habit. And I got to tell you, every little win is a win. And it is building your business, no matter how minute your goal is. It's just moving you forward, not behind.
Man, I love that. Every little win is a win. It's, you know, I was speaking with somebody not too long ago about years ago, I was a partner in another business. And while I was in the thick of building that business, what I realize now is I didn't celebrate enough. I didn't celebrate the journey. I didn't celebrate every little win. I was always so focused on the one big goal that I didn't take the time and focus to appreciate where we were at. And it's funny because when we were building that business in the first couple years, I remember every time something good happened, my business partner and I would call or text each other like several times a day. And it created this amazing momentum that catapulted the growth of our business. And then as the business grew, we got away from doing that little bit of celebrating those small wins. So it was just kind of jumped out at me as cool that you said that. And I just rambled forever. So
not at all. That makes a lot of sense because, you know, it's so funny. I mean, my support system when it comes to those little wins is, you know, I have a couple of very close friends or even my mom just, you know, say, hey, you know what? This is what happened today. This is a really good day. And of course, when you hear that feedback and saying, great job, son, what did you do to make this right? And how can you build on that success? And so it's nice to bounce those things back off each other. Because you know what, you're here to help each other. You're here to celebrate those victories, not only with yourself, but with your loved ones.
So what have you learned the most in the last couple of 3-4 years since you've been building your speaking business? Like what surprises you the most about what you're doing now?
Couple of things. First off, what surprised me was how collaborative other people in the same line of business are with me. People are so forthcoming and more than happy to help you build your business from the success that they have had in the past.
So it's a lot like the mortgage industry.
Yeah. Oh my God. I knew you. I had a feeling you were going to say that because you know what? You're right. It's the complete antithesis. Everybody's like, you know, all for themselves. And to have this kind of collaborative environment to help each other build, wow, that blew me away. And again, I didn't realize my support system would be fellow speakers. I really wouldn't. And so it was a wonderful and pleasant surprise. Number two, maybe not in that order, is the fact that how fired up I am to do any particular task on any course of the day in my speaking business and realize that this is not work. This is something, hey, don't get me wrong, I bust my butt on a daily basis with this business, but I enjoy it so much that I feel that this is more of a calling than work. I'd say probably those are the top two.
How long were you being called to this business before you pulled the trigger?
So the last thing that I would do in this life, I think I mentioned before, is be a keynote speaker.
Right.
So right after my injury, I got back to school. I went to this. I had this class. It was just a gen ed level class talking about people with different types of disability, whether it be hearing impaired, visually impaired, amputees, people with spinal cord injuries, traumatic brain injuries, strokes, cerebral palsy, Down syndrome, etc. So each class we would tackle another different topic. Well, when I first began as a student in the class, the professor approached me and asked if I could share my story. And I had this inner fight with me for a good week and a half, because I didn't give him an answer right away, thinking to myself, okay, this is my biggest fear I've ever had in my life. How am I going to even present it to a class and the intimate details of my life? So I had that mental trash going with me at the same time thinking, okay, wouldn't it be exhilarating after I'm done and I could just get it over with and say that I did maybe a bucket list issue? And so I was kind of balancing that out. A week and a half later, I did give them the answer, said reluctantly, I said yes. So building upon that talk and the days and weeks and days counted down to the actual day of the presentation, I built my outline. I tried to write out longhand exactly what I was going to say. And by the way, for somebody that's going to be a keynote speaker and you're going to write something verbatim, that ain't going to work. You're going to screw up and look like a fool. You know, a lot of the stuff and how I break my keynote speeches, and maybe I'm not unlike you, is I write the whole speech down, then I break it down into subjects, then I break it into an outline. And literally when I have a paper coming across the keynote speech, I probably have 4 or 5 lines written just as, you know, cursory notes or whatever. And then I just hammer out a 45-minute talk. Well, I had no clue at that point how to even structure a speech. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go up there. I'm going to tell my story. What happened to me before? What was the injury? How I'm dealing with it now? Because mind you, it's only been 18 months after the injury at that point. So I get up there and I thought that I was going to talk for 30 seconds and then blank out, which I did used to do in high school classes, and I would get zeros for the tests and whatever. So that was one of the big nervous things that I had to worry about, that unproductive fear that I categorize it, that are, what are people going to think about me? Again, people staring at me, and are they going to just give me dirty looks, or I'm going to forget the next line that I'm supposed to say? And so the professor called me up, introduced me, did my bio, and mic'd me up and said, "Okay, Dale, there you go." So I looked at the audience, and it was about 30 seconds into it. I can remember like it was yesterday that I just had something that exploded inside me, thinking, "Oh my God, I have not 30 people in a high school class. I had over 600 people in that lecture hall listening to the every word that I said, and were on the edge of their seats to think or to anticipate what I was going to say next." After that 30 seconds, that confidence that just consumed me pushed me out for an hour and 15 minutes for that whole class. So at that point, I'm thinking to myself, okay, this is not only cool, not only thrilling, but how do I push this and propel this into something else? Because I had no idea what I could even do with a speech anyways. Well, a couple of years later, I had somebody, it was actually my occupational therapist, that approached me and said, she was a chapter director of this organization called Think First Injury Prevention, and talking to high school students and middle school students, talking about preventing spinal cord injuries, traumatic brain injuries by making sound decisions. Because as I said earlier in our conversation, it was a stupid decision I made. I shouldn't have been on that railroad track in the first place. And so what I did was, we had a three-tiered program. They would show a video with people with spinal cord and traumatic brain injuries. Then the nurse would go up there and talk about the anatomy and the do's and the don'ts. And then I would share my own personal story. So what I would do is, I would talk for about 15 minutes, how my life was before the injury, what happened, how rehab was for me. And basically the underlying message was thinking first, using your mind to protect your body. Now, I had that certain amount of anxiety every time that I would do it. But I got to tell you, Tom, over the course of time, practicing more and more and more, that anxiety dissipated. And I realized, and this was gradual, but I realized that this was not self-therapy. This was actually me educating students to making sound decisions. So at that point, I knew that there was a calling, not knowing that I can live a sustained business as a keynote speaker, but to pay it forward when it came to educating our youth. So when I made that decision to become a keynote speaker, that why that I told you my mission statement before, it just made a hell of a lot of sense.
Isn't it great, you know, whether it's speaking or something else, when you have an experience that wakes you up in a way you've never been woken up before? Like, you just feel so alive when you're doing it.
And, fired me up,
yeah,
man.
Just brings it together, man. Like, all right, you know, I'm here for something much bigger than I might have thought initially. So that was 18 months afterwards. That was like 20 years ago. So this has been floating around in your mind for a long time. And the reason I ask is because I know a lot of people, I talk to a lot of people that they have dreams, they have goals, they have some talents or skills that they, for years, they might have been feeling like, yeah, I should give this a try, or I should, you know, take a shot. What do you say to the person that knows that they need to take a shot and they just haven't done it yet?
We're all dreamers. And you know what? Why do we have to wait till tomorrow? Number one, if you have a true passion in life and you're going to grow it organically, I say try it out and push on your dreams to make them become reality. Now, that's fine and dandy, and that's part of it, but that's only the first battle of the whole war that you're going to go to build a sustained business. So in order to do that, your why do you want to do that? How are you going to do that? How are you going to build that foundation in the building blocks of that specific business? I started a beauty salon business, believe it or not, with my mom back in 95, but I had her help, and all I did was help market the business. She was basically the anchor of that business. So I had a little business acumen at that point, but I had no idea how to build a business from the ground on up. And Tom, what I did was, I utilized those fears, the fears acronym: focus, energy, attitude, resilience, support systems. I talked to people, but it was so easy to become overwhelmed because how do I take a dream, this amazing thing that I know I can stand out amongst all of my peers, to a reality? And that feeling can just really consume you. So my suggestion is you take it in bite-sized pieces. You have these deadline dates that you're going to have to hit. How are you going to utilize your time management? Hey, if they have a full-time job, are you going to be able to do it after you take the kids and put them to bed? You're going to start working at an hour a day, then building it to 2 hours a day, to 3 hours a day. And then all of a sudden you have to make a decision. Well, you know what? I can sustain myself on this business. Maybe I should quit the other job. That doesn't happen overnight.
Dale, you know, let me play devil's advocate here. You know, just spending 30 minutes, 60 minutes a night working on this business, that's not really going to do much for me. So why should I even bother?
Well, it's a good point. But the thing is, how much do you want this? And how much sleep are you going to get during the course of the night? How are you going to not only work hard, but work smart? And so what I did was I elicited help from a business coach because I don't know it all. How am I going to build that time management issue while juggling the mortgage business at the same time? Now, I know you for a fact, you did the same thing when you went from the painting business to what you're doing right now. And I got to tell you, Tom, since I've known you, this was a complete 180. When I heard about the Strongpreneur podcast and the other stuff that you're doing, I mean, that was only a dream 3 years ago for you when I first met you. And now look at the reality now. We're having a conversation talking about our successful keynote speaking businesses. You're coaching people all around the country. I mean, you pushed this dream to reality. And it was time, it was hard work, but you worked smart, not only worked hard. And that's a huge thing.
Yeah, and my whole point here is to reiterate that every little bit of momentum that you can create in your business matters.
Absolutely.
You know, if you got an hour, then work your ass off for an hour and be consistent. So that consistent effort every day like you did, because I was going to say earlier, I've watched you build your keynote business, you know, from the outside, and you've just been Johnny on the spot with being consistent, man. There's just daily activity. And you know, from my vantage point, it never seems like you're opening a big fire hose on every day. You know what I'm saying? You're more like just, hey, I'm good with the garden hose right now. Turn the garden hose on every day, you know. And it's that consistent momentum that you've created over time, which has obviously paid off really well for you, man. And I'm fired up to see where you're going to be in the next 3-4 years. So as I kind of as we get ready to kind of wrap things up here. What one thing, all right, we've got small business owners, entrepreneurs from many, many different industries listening to this. What one thing do you feel compelled to share with them that's super important for them to know about seizing a moment?
Seizing a moment, saying that phrase is a hell of a lot easier than doing it. You know, when you have those failures, and by the way, I don't even like the word failure. I call it learning experiences because that helps you propel you and catapult you on the path to success. So it's going to happen. We're all going to have failures, but how do we learn from them to make us stronger business people and, or, you know, better, you know, the husband, wife, the son, daughter, a friend? I mean, how is that going to make us better people in life? And when we talk about my fears and overcoming them, that personal life spills into the professional life. And so I guess my point for entrepreneurs is seize the moment, but utilize your pragmatic skills to make those dreams come reality. But you need to say it on a daily basis. You need to keep working on a daily basis. You talked about consistency, Tom. I was the antithesis of consistency. I would do a blog here and there, and all of a sudden people are like, okay, that's great. Dale threw something out there. But hearing what you just said, Tom, you made my day in saying that, because that is the message that I want to put out there. There's two things to it. How are you going to brand yourself? What is your branding image? My branding image is overcoming fear, and I'm throwing speaking not only about my own experiences, but from people overcoming fear from around the world. Now, in doing that in a consistent manner, when people look at the name Dale Spencer or a Tom Reber, they're going to say, oh, yeah, that's the Fear Not guy. Oh, yeah, that's the Motor Hard guy. That's going to be synonymous. So doing that on a consistent basis, it's not going to happen in 3 months or 6 months, but I'm going to tell you, a couple of years down the line, people are going to know what you are out there. They're going to know what your reputation is as a person. And it's those daily, that daily effort and seizing that moment on every piece of business skill that you have during the course of the day is going to make that happen.
That's good stuff, man. It's so true. You know, it's funny. It's after you've been in the game long enough and you've been, you know, chipping away, it's cool when you get, I don't know if, I'm sure this is happening, but I'll get a text every now and then or something, or somebody will email me something that they read or saw with a link to it. And they go, hey, I thought of you with this. And it was right in line with what my message is. And that's revealing to how people think of you, which is cool. So
that's really cool. You want to tell our one good story before we go, because this has a lot to do with overcoming fear. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Is the airport. All right. So we're leaving Cabo, and you fill in where you need to here, because obviously you had a different point of view. I'm pushing Dale up to the counter at the airport in Cabo, and next thing I know, they're asking us to come outside of the building because of your wheelchair. The escalators were broke and all that other stuff or whatever, and we had to walk around the airport in Cabo to like this little side service door, and we got all our luggage piled on you, Dale, and I'm pushing you, and we're following this guy, and then we get into this, we go through this door, and it's like this dark hallway, and there's nobody there. The guy, he goes through a door, he leaves, he goes, wait here, and then he comes back out, and how many guys were there? Six?
So I got to tell you, there's probably about five or six guys. And I'm in a wheelchair, but I think I'm a pretty strong guy. I know I could take at least one of these guys. Tom's a Marine. I know he could take two of these guys. But what happens with all these other dudes if we get jumped?
So I'm sitting there. These guys come in. Nobody's saying a word. And they're all just staring at us. And I'm looking at Dale. Dale's looking at me, and I'm thinking, man, I'm gonna have to go like Jason Bourne on their asses. and it was funny because that's exactly who I was thinking of. Like I was going, all right, what would Jason Bourne do? But anyway, and then all of a sudden, the little boss lady comes around the corner, and this woman comes around, and she's short and round, and she's mean looking, and I'm thinking, oh crap, like she's the boss, and she's gonna give the order to like, you know, beat the crap out of us or something. And then she says, follow me. And so I take Dale and I push him down the hallway. We turn the corner and there was another security checkpoint that we had to go in and enter the airport from a different way. But yeah, you and I were on the same wavelength that day. And as soon as we got through the line, we were like high-fiving each other that, you know, we didn't get beat up. And
yeah, Tom, it was a moment. It was a moment because I'm thinking to myself, okay, I don't think I'm going to be able to make it on this plane. There's going to be some problems here.
Yeah.
And I was a little fearful at that point. So it's a good story, and I'm glad we're lived to tell about it, right?
Now, do you remember when we landed in Chicago? So we get back to Chicago, and we got to go through customs, and the line was literally over a mile long weaving through the airport. You remember that?
I do.
And I was like, oh crap. And then you go, don't worry, dude, I'm in a chair.
And you know what? I was wondering what was worse, that I thought we were going to get jumped on those people in Mexico or get killed by the stares that we got at the people while we were circumventing all those lines.
Yes. We went to the front of the line. They let you through. So here's the deal.
So it's a couple of things. I don't usually take advantage of the wheelchair. There's a couple of things. Airports, number one, number two, sporting events, number three, concerts. Good to go. You want to go to a good concert, give me a call. Oh, I wanted to throw out my couple of shameless plugs here.
Yeah, go for it. Tell us how we can find you, because, you know, I want people to hire you to come speak. So
thanks, brother.
How can I do that?
Thanks, brother, and likewise. So my website is www.dalespencer.com. That's DaleSpencer. You can find me on Facebook under Dale J. Spencer. You can click like. And then my Twitter handle, which I'm doing a lot of that these days. In fact, during our conversation, Tom, literally I've probably tweeted four or five times. Automatic scheduling, it's the greatest thing to get your message worldwide. That is D. Spencer Fear Not. And then if you ever have a question via email, I'd be love to entertain it at dale@dalespencer.com.
Awesome. And I'll make sure all that's in the show notes and all that stuff. So, dude, thanks so much for hanging out with us today. I guarantee you that, you know, your story has encouraged some people today. And I really appreciate you being with us, man.
What an awesome experience, brother.
Thanks, bud. All right, everybody. Thanks for hanging out with us. Take, as always, take one thing you heard today from Dale and implement it in your life. When you hear something good, it does no good if you don't do anything with it. So get off your butt, make something happen, put a bullet in mediocrity today. We'll see you guys next time.